This is The Spark. I'm Martha Woodruff. I asked Stanton attorney Lucy Ivanoff to come in and talk to me about her llamas. Lawyer Lucy is originally from New York, then spent some 20 years in the Philadelphia area as corporate in-house counsel to an international corporation. So this llama-loving lawyer spent the first four-plus decades of her life as a bona fide city slicker.
And then, through some snafus of vacations, I ended up down here on a vacation to learn how to ride horses.
Learn how to ride?
Learn how to ride. I had taken about four lessons before that, as far as riding lessons. It's what my son considers my midlife crisis.
Yeah, stop right there. Oh, how come at a certain age you decided to take up horseback? That's what you're doing as an adolescent girl.
Yeah. Beats me. I just got hooked. It was something I had done maybe about four or five times when I was an adolescent. But in New York, there's not a lot of opportunity for that. Mm-hmm. So when it was sort of, you know, the time to try different things, kids are grown, one kid is grown, it was time to try something else. So I took some riding lessons and then ended up coming down here to ride for a week. Fell in love with the horse, bought the horse, brought him up to Philadelphia with me. And from then on, for a couple of years, my vacations were to bring him and me, sort of my luggage was the horse. I'd come down and go riding for a while. And then,
where did you ride? Where did you go for a week to ride?
This was on a farm in near Greenville. So when I had a chance to sort of change course in my life, the job I was with was ending and my son had left for college, I moved down here, lived in a couple of different places, and then ended up buying my place in, like I said, about 07. Started out with just the two horses and a passel of dogs, and then started on the llamas.
Okay. Now you say, my place. Can you paint us a picture, please, of my place?
Okay. My place is in what I've come to know is not a valley, but a holler. It is wonderfully located that I'm nestled in this little spot, and I have no neighbors. The land around me is in conservation easement. My dogs can bark and not bother anybody. It's an old farmhouse. There's an old bank barn and a few outbuildings and some very steep hillsides surrounding me. And then when I get to the top of the ridge that surrounds me, I have incredible views to Jump Mountain and Little North Mountain and all around me. It's spectacular.
Did you have any trepidation, city woman, about moving yourself down to an old farmhouse in a holler?
Well, what was interesting is I didn't, because I'd sort of, in a couple of houses, been moving further out. But it's funny, when my parents first visited, they're still New Yorkers. And all the years that they lived in New York and all that, and any place I've lived before I came down here, they never had this absolute panic about security. They were like, oh, you've got to get a security system. I'm like, why? He said, because there's nobody around here. And so I compromised with them. I said, well, I'll get deadbolts. And so I called this company in to get the deadbolts installed. And I said, look, to make my parents happy, what would it cost to install an alarm system? And they said, what for? And I said, well, you know, for security. He said, well, who would hear you? And I said, okay, never mind.
You got that passel of dogs.
Yeah, I got that passel of dogs who are about the worst watchdogs. But actually, the llamas are the best watchdogs.
All right, let's get to these llamas. What are you doing with llamas?
Llamas. It was, you know, spending a few months after I moved there, or actually a year or two, trying to figure out how I could make this place more productive. I mean, I had two horses there, but horses are not productive. They're consumers. And I ran through all the possible livestock I could have and just didn't think I'd be really good at raising something to sell to eat. I would end up with a lot of cows on my property. So I, you know, went through all the possibilities, and I'd actually sort of settled on alpacas, except I thought they were kind of expensive and only had the fiber producing to show for it. But I thought, well, they need a guard anyway, and llamas are guards. Let me check out guards. So I went to this one, I think it was alpaca sale, and there was a...
Now, wait, stop. You're spouting great knowledge about alpacas and llamas and alpacas needing guards. Where did all this knowledge come from, city woman?
Talking to people who had alpacas, reading. I have a tendency to overanalyze, overinvestigate everything before I do it and take forever to make the decision, but gather all this information in the process.
Does being a lawyer have anything to do with that?
I would hope not, but probably it does. And so having figured out that llamas are good guards, I thought, well, let me start with the guards and then get the things being guarded. And so I ran into a vet up in Luray, Donna Matthews, who has raised llamas for 20, 30 years. And she had a couple of llamas, and they were so cute. They were, you know, adolescent llamas. So I ended up saying, okay, I'll buy these.
What's cute about an adolescent llama?
Oh, they just have this, they have a Dr. Seuss quality about them. They're ridiculous looking, but they're sort of quiet, you know, quietly ridiculous, probably is the best way to describe a llama. So I ended up, I thought, well, I'll start with two and see how they make it, you know, how they get through a summer, because summers are a problem for them, the heat and all. And somehow two grew to 23 that I have now.
23 llamas?
Yes.
Any alpacas?
No.
So it's one big guard pack.
Well, yeah, because I decided I like llamas, and llamas can produce fiber, which is what the alpacas do. But on top of that, they can be guards. They're wonderful guards. I've watched them chase off coyotes. They also can be pack animals, and they're more self-sufficient, I think, than alpacas or many other forms of livestock. They're about the easiest livestock you can raise.
Let's talk about the growth of the pack of the gaggle, mm-hmm. the herd of
alpacas. The herd. I think they're a herd.
They're herds. Okay. The herd of llamas from, you have two.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, we're 23.
And the two were gelded males, so they didn't accomplish
that. So
this,
they had nothing to do with this expansion.
No, they had nothing to do with it.
All right.
I, you know, thought the two were great, but two do not produce enough fiber or anything else to be really productive. They would be pets mm-hmm. if I just had the two. So I think my next step was about four or five more. And then...
Wait, and where'd you get them? Where do
again,
you...
same from the same vet. Some of them were then bred females. And so I had, and I'd never dealt with the birth of any animals. And so I had then ended up with a couple of baby llamas.
Now, wait a minute. Let's not gloss over this birth, this birth experience. Okay, you realize you have a pregnant llama or two.
Yes.
And how do you prepare yourself for...
You don't. They take care of everything. Not only do they take care of birth on their own, they're incredibly convenient about it. If they haven't given birth by 7 in the morning, they won't do it till after 3 in the afternoon. Except for watching one birth, I've typically walked down to the barn in the morning and there's a baby, which wasn't there before. Like I said, they're the most incredibly self-sufficient animals, and they are also easy to time when they have their babies because, you know, we don't want to get too deeply into the whole process, breeding process, but they don't go into season or anything like that. Breeding is what stimulates ovulation and all that, so you can time when you'll have the babies. You'll have them in the spring or in the fall. And out there's a baby all of a sudden.
You know, this sounds as though something was invented by humans for human convenience.
You know, it almost, I guess to some extent, has been helped along by humans, because what I've read and what I've heard is the difference between llamas and other animals that are just for fleece like alpacas and all mm-hmm. is that llamas were, in the days that they were in South America, they had to... guard, they had to produce fiber, and they had to be pack animals. If they didn't accomplish any one of those things, they became dinner. So there was a selective breeding, essentially, to get them, and they ended up being smarter. They ended up being more self-sufficient because there were higher expectations of them than just producing fiber. And then we have done more because llamas used to not have great fiber to compare to, say, alpacas as far as for spinning and weaving, and now they've been bred to have the same quality fiber, essentially, as alpacas and all. It's this wonderful fiber for spinning and weaving. And that's primarily what I have them for.
For fiber production.
For fiber.
When you are breeding your llamas, do you worry about breeding lines? Are you trying to get a result in a... Is it a
yes.
lamb? Is it a baby?
It's a Kriya. They're called Kriyas.
Kriya.
C-R-I-A, a Kriya.
Okay, in a Kriya.
Yes, I am. I don't have stud males because I don't want to deal with the management of that. If I want to breed a female, I take them to be bred. My result that I'm looking for is the fiber. It's the quality of the fiber on the llamas, that they produce a nice long fiber, and either Surrey, which is that sort of wavy kind of fiber, or just nice, thick, beautiful. And I like natural colors. I don't look for example, white, which many people look for, so the fiber can be dyed. I look for the natural colors that produce different kinds of brown or a beautiful gray-brown, fawn colors, and those are the colors that I look for, and then send
in
off...
In your sire.
In the sire and in the female, so I can produce the right kind of baby, the ones I'm looking for.
Is your herd of 23 mainly the result of your breeding, or have you...
No, I have, of my own, I think I only have right now four or five that are mine. The rest I continue to buy some, and in fact, if everything works well, I have seven pregnant ones, so I will have a lot of babies in the spring. And llamas just, you look at those numbers, llamas just don't take up a lot of space and room. I mean, these 23 llamas are easier on all my fields and pastures than my two horses. They'll eat weeds, they eat cedars, they climb up and down, they'll eat, you know, nuisance shrubs. They just take up less pasture space.
They sound very goat-like.
They are very goat-like and easier contained than a goat, though. They don't challenge fences. They don't try to escape. One time I accidentally left a gate open and I was driving home and found my llamas just all walking down the road together. And I sort of got them turned around and they sort of all just all together walked home. So they're not into the escape sort of thing. They're not into the panic that horses get into. They're just easy, easy animals.
Jump in the line, rock your body on time. Okay, I believe you. Jump in the line, rock your body on time.
What do you call female llamas?
Are they? I just always call them female llamas.
All right, your female llamas that you've bought, where have you found them?
I've always just bought mine from Donna Matthews up in Luray because I trust her. She's a vet. She's been involved. She's one of those people who, you know, teaches the camelid courses or is the advisor in Virginia Tech on these animals. So I've just trusted. I've been happy with the quality I've gotten. And she has enough. I mean, she has several hundred that I get a variety of bloodlines and all that sort of thing. And I just trust her as far as where I get them.
And you are looking out, you're tracking bloodlines, and you're in with your organized mind.
Well, I may spend a lot of time analyzing things. That doesn't mean I organize afterwards.
But these are things that matter and that you want to do right.
Yes, I do. And that's, again, what I like about llamas, that if any llama does not have the best fiber and I figure I have enough llamas, then I can sell them as guards or as pack animals, though I have not parted with one yet. But when I feel I have the right number that my property can handle, I'll sort of start looking at the ones that produce fiber that's not as good, and they'll have other jobs.
What's a year in the life of a llama like? What kind of care do they take? How do they winter?
The only
the summer?
Care they really take, and this is also the way that I dispel the spitting reputation that llamas have, in that every 6 weeks I give them all a shot that is against a worm that they can get from deer. Other than that, the llamas just spend most of their time grazing, just like any other animal like that. In the summer, when it's hot, they're smart enough to stay in the barn and stay cool because they just have access to walk in and out of the barn when they'd like to. then the rest of the time you just see them sort of up and down the hillsides. I feed them sort of a treat every morning to get them to come into the barn just so they're used to it in case I need to give them shots or anything like that. Other than that, as long as they have water and they have grass, that's basically what they do. They hang out. They're very curious. But if llamas just have this thing about canines, and that's why they're good guards. One or two of my dogs have at times ventured into the fields, and they're immediately surrounded by llamas who will attack them because that's their job. That's why they've chased off coyotes. And anybody pulls up in my driveway and a strange dog gets out of their car, the llamas will usually be right up against the fence checking out the dog. But they're very curious. They're not pets. They don't like to be. And that's why, you know, I don't blame them for spitting when they're in a petting zoo or something. I was told that they have the same sort of personal space issues that people do. People don't like somebody reaching their hand at their face, but they might not mind a hand being on their back or their shoulders. And llamas are sort of the same way, but they're easy to train. Mine are all halter trained. It takes about 10 minutes to halter train a llama. They're just easy animals, and they don't spit much.
All right. City woman who had a midlife crisis a while ago, a couple years ago, and resumed horseback riding. In the past couple minutes, I've heard you talk about giving llamas shots and halter training them. And you're doing this, both of those? You are doing that?
Yes.
And how did you get these life skills? Yes.
Basically going up to Donna's farm and watching her, I would ask to come up there because I would get these youngsters, the ones that were either born or she has sold me a couple of, say, 4, 5, 6 month old youngsters. And then I'm like, okay. And my first attempt at llama halter training was sort of a disaster because they can run around a little enclosure faster than I can. And so I went up to see her and figured out how to do it right. That's basically how I've learned. She showed me how to give shots. She showed me how to teach them on a halter. It works. Once a year, she comes down and gives them their annual shots. And so I sort of get to visit with her. If other than times I'm bringing llamas up there for breeding or something like that. But that's basically how, you know, you just, it's the two, it was easy to start with two. If I had started with 10 or 15, I would have been overwhelmed. But two was easy to start with. They're just nice, easy animals.
What was the last car you were driving when you lived in Philadelphia, and what are you driving now?
My last car was an Audi.
It's a Philadelphia.
A6 Audi, yes. It was a, you know, good corporate lawyer car. I now drive an Xterra and a 91 Ford F-250 diesel. And so friends of mine and I have noted that the days we would drive by and have car envy, now we have tractor envy if we see somebody has a better tractor.
She thinks my tractor's sexy. She thinks my tractor's sexy. She thinks my tractor's sexy.
You'll find links to Lucy Ivanoff's farm website, her law practice website, and the Stanton store where her yarn and fiber are sold on the Spark page at WMRA.org.